Meet Sven. He's very excited right now. Sven doesn't play poker, but he's still very excited. You see, Sven is a dealer for Porsche, and he's just found out that PokerStars players earn $7.5 million in VIP points every month. And with our all-inclusive program, that's enough to redeem 5 of the lovely pieces of German engineering every day.
Yeah!
Keep Sven happy. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out why our rewards program seems to leave other schemes, well, out of commission. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Annie Up PokerCast presented by PokerStars. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's March 11th, 2011, and you're listening to the best PokerCast on the seas. I'm Sonny Crockett.
And I'm Scott Long.
Do you approve of my outfit today, Scott?
Yes. I was shocked. I turned the corner. I'm like, you know, that looks like Chris last night when I got to dinner. And I'm like, but wow, holy pastel, Batman.
This is what Frank Costanza refers to as cabana wear.
Perfect
for sailing. Tommy Bahama clothing. Something, obviously, you're not in touch with. But I was feeling very comfortable, very suave in my outfit. And you walk up to me and make me feel like I got the small beard, you know, the 5 o'clock shadow going. I thought, you know, hey, I was going to pull off the Miami. It's the first time I was going out of Fort Lauderdale. I thought I'd pull off the Miami Heat. And
well, when I saw you, I thought we were going to have to run down, get some fast boat here, run down some drug smugglers.
Where's Glenn Fry when you need him?
I don't know what you're going to look like at dinner tonight. Are you going to show up with one of those little sailor hats and a pipe and...
You know, I never actually know what I'm going to wear until I know what we're doing at the poker table. So I don't know. I may actually pull out the... Gilligan's Island? Oh, that was a Gilligan's Island reference, right?
Okay. Yes, I
hated that show growing up, so I'm not really sure.
How could you hate Gilligan's Island?
Mr. Howell, right? That's what you're trying to
say. Oh, I love Mr. Howell. I wanted to be Mr. Howell.
Lovey.
I wanted to be the professor, too. Actually, I wanted to be everybody.
I always wanted to make a hand radio out of coconuts.
Yeah.
And whatever they
Unfortunately, call most of my life I was Gilligan, so. And I never met a ginger.
After all of the food I've eaten on this cruise, I could easily be the captain or skipper or whatever the hell his name is. I never watched the show. I don't know. But
that is right. We're coming to you pseudo-live.
Yes.
From the Annie Up Poker Cruise. We're listing.
It's funny.
Left or right as
it's
we
funny.
Do the
we,
show.
We usually tape the show on the day before, so it should be March 10th that we're taping it. Yet it's the 11th, but we're not going to post it to the 12th or the 13th. It's like you get through that whole international dateline thing, and you have no idea what time it is in life.
It's almost as confusing as trying to figure out when the next Apes event's going to be. But we got plenty to talk about the cruise later on, but we're going to do a full show here, so let's start off by you actually ran the gauntlet, did something that few people have been able to do, Chris. You have successfully deposited on PokerStars using e-checks.
You know, I don't know what I was thinking. I took a bunch of money off of PokerStars and realizing that I could always just quickly deposit it back on. And then they had this issue where people were emailing us saying, what's
right.
going on? I can't get any money on Stars or any of the other things using e-checks. And I freaked out. I actually called you up and said, Scott, I got no money on Stars for Apes, man. What am I going to do? And you're like, what are you doing? And I'm like, well, I took my money off because I had a bunch of it on there. I want to take it off and use it for something else. And you're like, and then you started making fun of me, you know, like young grasshopper, how stupid are you? So I was like, well, I'll just put in. So now, before the cruise, actually a couple of weeks before the cruise, I tried e-checks. Put money on, and it's there, and it's still there. It was still there before we left. I checked the night before we left for the cruise. It was still there. I used it. It didn't give me a negative balance. Didn't send me a email saying, you know, hasn't cleared. So my e-checks money is online, so I don't know if people have been waiting to still use it or not, but give it a shot because mine made it through, and it's been there for almost 3 weeks now.
All right, to summarize, any of you need money transferred to you on PokerStars, Chris Cosenza is the person to ask for. AUN 2112.
Yeah, if you need $5.50, that's pretty much all I got on there. I'm doing it for event by event on Apes, but it has worked. So
well,
money's on there.
That's good to hear because so many people had trouble, and I mean, e-checks has always been the easiest way.
Yes.
Of all the payment those crazy payment processors we've had to go through since we started playing online. E-checks was great. Yeah. You know, bing, click, yeah. Bong.
And we actually brought it up with a few of the players on the ship this week, and they were bringing up that they had to use wire transfers.
Yeah.
And I got to be honest with you, I've never actually transferred a wire. I don't know how. Wait, do you cross the lines?
Yeah, you got to get the two soup cans first.
Okay. I was thinking it was more like, you know, remember that movie The Abyss? And the guy goes down and he's got to cut the wire to know which one to cut for the bomb, and then, but he's looking through his shield with that light, and the light makes everything green. He's like, cut the green wire, and everything's green, and that's what I thought a wire transfer was. He had to transfer which wires to cut, so I don't know really, I have no idea how
red,
to
no blue.
Transfer money cutting wires and transferring wires, but thankfully E-Checks worked for me, so please check it out, because you know, you don't want to miss apes.
Yeah, that's great, and particularly if you're in New Jersey, this is very good news for you, because just before we got on the cruise ship, Governor Chris Christie there vetoed the first in the nation's interstate online gambling bill. It passed overwhelmingly in both houses of New Jersey, and then I guess at the end of the day, he just decided it wasn't best for the state. And of course, you know, the whispers are he wants to run for president, and having this poker stigma on him will hurt him with the conservative base. So that was part of the reason. But
I think he's just bitter that his parents named him Chris Christie. I mean, really. Dave Davis, Chris Christie, Rob Roberts.
I always wanted to be Scott Scott.
I do not want to be a Chris Christie. I, what are you thinking?
I wouldn't want to be long, though. That's too much.
So, isn't it true, though, that they could just override this? They want.
Yeah,
to?
Well, you know, the first thinking is that since they passed it so overwhelmingly, that it's almost as close to veto-proof as you can get, but it sounds like some of that support was hoping that it would just get signed, and, you know, they may not want to bring it back and create a big fight over this issue. But it sounds like also some of the people that pushed it are going to at least put the finger in the air, take a temperature, and see whether it's worth trying to do.
Well, I think they should. The reason why is because if what you said is that this guy wants to run for president, then he's saying, hey, Jersey, screw you. I'm leaving you anyway. So screw you, Christy. We're going to pass it without you because you're going to leave us high and dry. You know, and we're going to sit there and be like, hey, we need some revenue. We need to get some stuff going in our state. So, hey, you want to leave us? Well, then we're gonna make something that's going to make a difference. So I'm hoping that they do that. I hope they check the which way the wind's blowing and make it happen, because that would set off a pretty huge thing, I think, throughout the entire country. With
yeah,
all,
and from a philosophical standpoint, I was really hoping this would pass, because I think maybe one of these other bills, the Florida, Iowa, California, will also probably get passed. And those three bills are all very similar. The New Jersey one is very different. And I kind of wanted to see the New Jersey bill and at least one of these other three in action to see which one actually would work out the best. And so no one else is trying to do the bill like New Jersey. So, you know, if they can't get it done, then it's going to be a little less of a exciting political science day at the office.
Is it possible while we've been on the ship that something like this has already happened, though? Or is
very well likely, yeah. I mean, yeah. Should we ask someone?
Hey, pick up that phone and call somebody right now. We got a phone.
If
in the
you're listening right now and you have an update, I'm in stateroom 2262. Leave a voicemail so the little thing blinks at night. So when I get back to the room at 3:30, I can't sleep because of the blinking thing. And I'll check the voicemail, and it'll be you instead of the art director on board inviting me to tomorrow's art gala.
Hey, you want to be a gold member. I said the only gold member in my life is Austin Powers, buddy. That's that movie's the only person that I've... You're like, oh, Chris, how can you not be a gold member? Royal Caribbean, we're on this show. Well, that's why I don't want people calling me and reminding me that there's an art auction with free champagne. I don't even drink.
Hey, no, hey, anytime they're reminding me of the free drinks on a cruise ship, I'm going to be there.
But somehow, though, we did manage to get some feedback.
We did. You know, I did, and this is actually no lie. I was walking up on the deck this morning going to breakfast. There was a pigeon. I am not making this up.
Away.
I was just walking and I saw this guy and I'm like, hey, it's a pigeon. That's cute. And then I walk by and I'm like, wait a minute. There shouldn't be a pigeon on a cruise ship. And then I was looking around. I'm like, we're nowhere near land.
Was he dressed like Sonny Crockett too?
He did not.
Did he have his cabana wear on, a little hat?
He was a little more modern in his pigeon couture. But yeah, I mean, seriously, how's a pigeon get on a ship?
Well, I think that Ryan Gibbs sent it in to us. He had a little carrier pigeon.
Yeah, that's probably.
And you
what
pulled
it was.
The note out and said, "Feeds feedback for the India Pokercast." They had to get it on the show today, so he pulled it out. And I'm going to read his note now. This comes from Ryan Gibbs. He says, "Picture me driving on a snowy morning in the Denver area on January 31st."
All right, hold on. right, I got it.
All right, you got it. You got, yeah, mental, I got that mental picture.
Yeah. I'm thinking, why am I living in Denver?
Especially in January. So I'm listening to our show intently, Antioch Pokercast, by the way.
Excellent. We appreciate that.
And it's Hand of the Week. Suddenly, a car slides in front of him in an intersection, and he smashes into the side of this guy's car.
Yikes. Was anybody hurt?
He says, no, nobody hurt, by the way. Woo. Nobody right. hurt. So, now we can make fun of it.
Yeah, yeah, because it's going to be a terrible story.
As long as nobody's hurt, we're all right. He says, when I gather my thoughts, I hear you and Chris still talking about the Hand of the Week. Don't remember exactly, but you were discussing what to do on the turn or after the flop. He says, I had to laugh when I got back to the car after making sure nobody was hurt and you guys are still going on. We'll always remember that. Car was totaled and I was without a ride for almost a month. Got a new car the other day and with some cool media functions. And now it's easier and better than ever to listen to my iPod. Thanks for the memories, guys. So we helped him through this traumatic experience. Ante up, healing the accidentals.
Healing the accidentals. I don't know if that's going to fit on a t-shirt. We'll try, though.
We'll ask PMS Pokerware.
Oh, man. No, I laughed out loud when I saw this. I mean, first of all, I was reading it as you were there, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, I hope this doesn't have a bad thing. I mean, he seemed kind of funny in writing, and I'm like, so I got to, nobody heard him. I'm like, oh, okay, good. Woo! But, wow, that's, you know, and I'm sure we weren't going on about the flop return. I'm sure we were trying to figure out what cards were somewhere.
In the right order.
Or some other nonsense like that.
Yeah, it does tell me that maybe our hands a week are a little too long. For this gentleman to get into an accident, gather his thoughts, go outside, make sure everyone else is okay, wait for the police to show up, fill out a police report, call his family, have him pick him up, have the tow truck take the car away, or whatever it is, get into his car, and we're still talking about the Hand of the Week? Something's not right there, buddy. We need to trim it back a little.
Maybe it was one of the Lee Child's ones, you know.
It had to be
one of
the Lee
Child's. 4 or 5 hours, so.
I think the Lee Child Hand of the Week is still going on now, while we're doing the show. And he's listening to it.
Oh, we appreciate that, Ryan, and encourage everybody else to send us feedback at podcast@antiupmagazine.com. And, of course, if we haven't used it before, unlike Ryan, we'll be happy to send you some swag. And we do have a new swag winner this week, Chris.
Very good.
He goes by Todd.
Todd.
Just Todd.
Todd.
No, even like, he didn't even give me a pseudonym, please.
I'm going to go on a limb here and say this is Todd Witellis.
Are you?
Yeah. Dandruff. I'm going to say this is who it is, because he's the one that was on 60 Minutes for what we're about to talk about here.
Okay.
So that's who it is. I think it's Todd Witellis, Dandruff, writing into us and trying to, you know, angle shoot here with this letter.
With
so
the swag.
Why don't you read it?
All right, here's what he writes, and I had to nip and tuck a little bit here because, you know, we wanted to finish the show before we got to Ford.
We don't want to make it as long as the Hand of the Week.
But yeah, my apologies to Todd because he had really good points in here, but I think I tried to summarize the best things here for him.
Okay.
But he said, anyway, just finished watching that 60 Minutes piece on online poker, and he said it got him thinking, is regulation really in our best interest as players, especially professional players? He says, granted, it sounds good, and we'd like to believe that government regulation would help curb cheating like the infamous UB scandal. At the very least, it would give the government the authority to enforce restitution to ensure those who got cheated are properly reimbursed, and those responsible are prosecuted, unlike Ross Hamilton. Russ Hamilton.
Russ, yeah. He even says Russ here.
He even says Russ.
He says Russ here, and you still said Russ.
Got a little tongue tied there. Still thinking about the pigeon.
I think you like Friends too much.
I says, but can we really trust the United States government to look out for our best interests? At best, they're donk calling a 3-bet on the river in Omaha High Low. Very nice.
Nice, nice analogy there. Yeah, okay.
With a third nuts, one way. At worst, they're colluding with big business, corporate lobbyists, and special interest groups. Either way, we're all in with a Deuce-7 offsuit.
Hey, I have one with that.
He goes on to talk about how every president in the past has further deregulation at the benefit of big business and not the American people.
Right.
Then he finishes up with, and what does government regulation ultimately mean? More taxes. The U.S. government will tax the online poker sites, which will most certainly get passed along to the players in the form of bigger rakes, not to mention more taxes for the players. This says, keep up the good work, fellas. I only recently discovered your podcast, but I'm already a loyal fan.
Funny how we have that impact on people. They, as soon as they turn on, instantly they're loyal to us.
Yeah, that's great.
That's because we're loyal to them, I think.
Yeah.
Mutual respect.
We never just leave them high and dry. We record the show when we're on the cruise ship.
Make them low and wet.
I'm missing the... I'm missing my fourth meal of the day because of this.
What about 11sies? That's my obscure Lord of the Rings reference there. Everyone got that for all you IT guys.
Oh, man, you spent half the cruise calling people dorks, too, and then you bring up Lord of the Rings. Great. Nice job.
I never called anybody a dork on this cruise.
W-P-N-H.
W-P-N-H. Y-I-W.
All right, well, I wrote back to Tom, and I told him that you wrote a very good column in the magazine a couple months ago with your views, and I think we probably talked about it on the show. But just to remind Todd, what's your thinking on this?
Well, I mean, I thought the way it was set up with Harry Reid, that initial setup, a lot of my column was based on how that would just hurt more than it would help. And I agree with him in the letter where he talks about how it's looking out for any kind of regulation would probably just look out for the big businesses and, you know, corporate America and not for us. I'm not so sure I agree. And I don't know. I could be wrong. I'm not so sure I agree that the online site would pass along the tax problems toward us by bigger rakes and things like that. I don't think that would happen. I think that they'd be happy to have regulation. I just want it to be an equal regulation and not some sort of monopoly for the land-based casinos, that kind of thing. I think lobbyists are a terrible thing. And I think we need to get in there and mix it up more from a PPA standpoint and those types of groups. I don't think that we would hurt from it. I mean, in that sense. And I know you have a lot more views on this, too, because we've talked about this, even on this cruise, about some of the regulations and things and what it would mean for us. But I would like to know, I mean, I would like to know that it's safer, that it, that people who want to play, who are worried, people, even today, people still think that it's illegal. And I even had a seminar here. When we had a Hold'em seminar here, and people were bringing up, because I told them, a lot of them wanted to know how they could get, how to experiment more, play more poker without it costing them their whole bankroll in the poker room. And I said, online poker is a great way to do that. And instantly they're like, yeah, but it's illegal. And I just thought, oh my God, you know, they read our magazine, you know, they obviously know a lot about poker. They're in poker rooms all the time. You'd think that they would have had that conversation long before they had it with me.
Right.
And they didn't even realize it. And then you got these 60 Minutes reports with the Washington Post and just poor journalism. We've talked about this on the show, how terrible that was. So I think that it needs to be out there so that they need to be able to freely advertise these poker rooms without having to put the .net on there and explain on that it definitely is not illegal to play online. They can actually say that in the commercials now and things like that.
Right.
So I think regulation would allow it to be a much more safe, open. That's what I like. I like transparency. And I think it would be. So that was my feeling on it, and I know you have more about it.
No, I think that's good. And, you know, I think I agree with you, too, that I don't know whether the additional cost of regulation is going to get passed on directly to the players. I think right now you still have – it depends on how competitive the market is what you mentioned, too. If it's – you know, if they shut out the Poker Stars and the Full Tilts of the world, then it becomes more likely that'll get passed on to us. But the more open the competition, you know, I think these sites would make so much money that just the competitive nature of it would force them not to – pass that on to people. But let's assume for a minute even that they do. What I think is missed here is kind of, and I'm not picking on Todd here, but I think you're looking at it from a on first level kind of thinking here. And what I like to think is like that beyond it is the fact that, as you mentioned, there's lots of people right now that aren't playing online that either think it's illegal or know that it's not, but just still feel uncomfortable.
Right.
And if it's brought out of the shadows, you're going to get a lot more players on the sites. Theoretically, a lot of those players are probably going to be weaker than the players playing now, so it's probably going to be better games for people that are already on. And even if that's wrong, at least you're going to have more player liquidity. So, you know, when you sign on, you're going to have a lot more options to play the games you want to play at the limits you want to play. Where right now, you know, I might log on and want to play a $16 Omaha high-low sit-and-go, and I can't find it even on Stars, the biggest site in the world.
Right.
Whereas if we had more players, I might be able to play that instead of having to force myself to play a game that's not optimal for me. So I think that stuff, in the end, is going to pay off. And then the other thing, too, as you mentioned, is that they'll be able to advertise. Now, I know people are saying, well, Scott, they already advertise. They're on TV, they're in your magazine. And I'm like, it's true, but you notice that the advertising isn't as directed as when it's this .net stuff on TV. They're forced to do the .net on TV. And I think a lot of them hold back a lot of their marketing budget because they just know that, because of what we're talking about, that there's a segment of the population that just, no matter how much exposure they get, just aren't going to sign up unless they are told by the government, hey, it's okay to sign up now. So if you do that, then they're going to spend a lot more money. And then the other thing is the live tournament fields are going to get much, much bigger, I think.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, look at what the NAPT did, I mean, with their first event. I mean, just massive amounts of players because, you know, right now you can't go to the Indian Nevada event and do any kind of online thing. So
right.
Open that up. And the NAPT is even struggling right now in some places trying to find a venue that'll let them in because, yeah. You know, they have, you know, the stigma too. So you take that off, then all of a sudden you're going to have all kinds of online qualifiers. So if you're a live player, even if you never want to play online, I think you should favor playing online regulation because it's going to ultimately build up the fields in the live arena. And then, of course, those lead to cash games too. So I think any kind of, whatever you're, what kind of player you are, there's something, a big benefit to having good quality online regulation.
If I remember correctly, too, I don't know, from his letter, I remember reading it and talking a little bit. I think I may have emailed him about it, too, but I'm not sure. And he mentioned something about worrying that the government's going to tax the money we win and watch what we're winning and stuff. And I'm not so sure they would do that either. I mean, they don't sit there and put a IRS rep in every poker room that's live and watch how much you're reporting and everything. So I don't know if they would actually do that or not.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, it's up to you to report a lot of your winnings. I mean, obviously, with more regulation, there's probably a little bit more paperwork and stuff getting reported. So, but, you know, again, I mean, you should be reporting all that anyhow. I mean,
right.
I'm not saying that...
But, I mean, that's what he's worried about.
Right. I mean, really, that's the only concern if you are tacitly evading taxes as it
right.
is now.
Right.
But, you know, for if you're doing the taxes on the up and up, then nothing should change at that point.
And a smaller point, too, that if it does get regulated, they may actually put in some sort of... information, or at least pass something that would be more specific for online wins and losses, because right now our good friend and columnist John Lanier wrote something, and also our new columnist Ann Margaret Johnston, how to keep track of what you're doing, and there's really nothing in the paperwork or the laws or whatever that say, you know, if you're winning money online, here's what, you know, or whatever. There's nothing like that, so
right.
A lot of people don't even realize how to do it or why to do it or whatever, and I think if something like this was regulated, that something more specific would be written for the professional poker player or the casual player playing online, too. So a lot of good things can come out of it, a lot of information, too. So I agree with him that no one ever likes Big Brother to get
right.
too involved with you, but really, in this case, we want more players, we want a safer environment, we want a much more accepted environment for this game, and I think that's really the only way it's going to happen.
That's true. All right, well, in the meantime, Todd, we are going to be happy to give you a download of the Poker Hand Breakdown Pro, a hand history analysis program for single or mixed games from element26.net. And then a general reminder, again, podcast at anyoutmagazine.com is the email to send us all kinds of stuff so we can send you all kinds of stuff.
Let me ask you a question, Scott.
Uh-huh.
Does that phone work? Right there?
Looks like it works.
Can you...
hold on. I think the art director's calling me.
Does the hotline work this week? Can we do that?
No. You know, here's the thing. It's $7.95 a minute to use this phone to call our hotline. I love our fans. I know you love our fans. But, you know, $7.95 a minute. I mean, I guess it would only be $7.95 because it's the hotline, right?
It's 1 minute.
But I don't know if we have it in the budget to do the ship to shore to check the hotline this week.
I've lost so much money this week that I can't even afford to make that call, I don't think. you know, and that's how much I used to pay to call Miss Cleo. Remember?
Oh, yes.
But since we went and visited her in Jamaica,
right,
I have her
right,
home direct line, so I don't have to worry about calling her anymore to spend all that money.
You get your email address, Pat. It's much easier.
Of course, we have no hotline this week. There's really no way for us to actually check in and hear any clips. So we want to remind you, though, if you call 813-448-1120, and you do it when we're actually on a land-based line, we will hear it, and if we play it, we'll give you something really cool, like a T-shirt from PMS Pokerwear, which sells hilarious shirts for gals and guys in the Antiup store at www.antiupstore.com.
That's right.
I sounded like a commercial there, didn't I?
That means you're doing it well.
Excellent.
You need to have a little ding, a little starburst coming out of the corner of your mouth at the end. All right, well, a couple housekeeping items. Obviously, we had the first satellite for Apes of this year on March 6th. We were busy... loading up the U-Haul to make the drive to death down here.
And you know how we know they had it? Because it was a 6. There was a 6 and a date.
That's right.
And it was the first 6
so
of the month.
So easy to remember.
We know that there was a satellite.
Well, of course, our first event of Ape 6 will be March 16th. That will be Stud. You can check it out at andyupmagazine.com/apes for all the details. And one more reminder that our longtime listener, Rant, is giving away 2 seats for the March 26th event. All you got to do is post something of quality on the forum, a hand quality on the forum, and do that before March 16th. And he is Judge, Jury, and Judy.
Judge Judy. And, oh, you know what? That would be a great show, though. Judge Rant.
Judge Rant?
Can you imagine him as a judge? That would be awesome.
I love Rant. I really, really do. But if I show up for a court date and he's the judge...
You're screwed.
Absolutely. I am I'm surrendering. I'm doing... I'm pleading the no contest, whatever. I have my arms out. I'm like, ew, Rusty, come over here. Put the cuffs on me.
Rusty. Scott Long, I sentence you to life imprisonment for not playing your short stack properly. For not shoving when you had Queen 8... and the button with the blinds behind you. Also, I mentioned our store again. Don't forget our store, anyupstore.com. We have Anyup logo items. People are always asking us about that. But we also have other products, too. It's not just about our store. It's about just really a huge plethora of products that are cool product things for poker. So enjoy that. Take a look at it and see what you think. Tell us what you think about the store, too, as well.
Remember, Sven, our friendly Poker Stars Porsche dealer? Sven's still very excited.
Yeah!
He already knows that Poker Stars players together earn enough VIP points to redeem 5 Porsches every day. What's made him a little more excited is the fact that 5 of our Poker Stars players have already claimed these lovely pieces of German engineering. Keep Sven happy. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out why our rewards program seems to have left all the other schemes, well, stuck in neutral. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
Never in my life, Chris.
Are you really starting with that? Oh, man.
I am. I have never flopped quads against somebody that had the big boat on the flop.
And yet,
I mean,
still
how
losing.
Well do you run?
And yet, I'm still losing a ton of money on this show. All right, so here's what happens. It's the one time in my life that I wish I didn't run a poker room and was playing poker in a casino with a juicy bad beat. Yes, I had pocket queens, got it all in, pre-flop against someone with pocket aces. And it came ace, queen, queen. Poor guy. But he only had, I only won like $35 on that hand, too.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And that would have been a bad beat in like 80% of the poker rooms that we distribute our magazine to.
Absolutely.
And even if it wasn't, it would have been the mini bad beat in the other 20%. And I would have made like $5,000. Oh, no, the other guy would have made $5,000 on the mini. But on the real bad beat, I could have made like $50,000, $60,000, $100,000 with that hand. Instead, I made $35 and then lost it all to his wife on the next hand. She had pocket aces on the next hand, and I had ace king suited. I left it all to her.
Moving around the table. That was something to see.
It was bizarre. And I wish I had a camera on my face, because I wonder if I had a tell. Like, if it wasn't all in pre-flop, I wonder if I would have, like, had this huge, like, like gaping mouth and open eyes. It was remarkable. It flopped quads, and the guy had pocket aces. I thought maybe he had kings after he called me so quickly when I went all in. But, wow, that was incredible. Yeah, and of course it happens when I'm not playing in a real room, you know. That's just my luck.
Yeah.
You said, how well do I run? That's how well I run, Scott. It's actually a bad thing that I did. I got that hand. Not a good thing. The guy had a stack of, like, you know, 500. It would have been a great thing. But he had a stack of, like, 35 when it happened. So in a 1-3 game.
Wow. Oh, man. Wow. Well, you know, I had an interesting hand, too, and we're going to move that to the hand and we can talk about it. But other than that, I don't think I had a lot of weirdness.
No.
Happened on this trip. It's really odd as much as I played.
No, not I didn't either. I mean, I played a lot. I think one of the things, too, is we played a lot of horse this trip.
Yeah.
And not a lot of weird things happen in horse.
Yeah.
Hold'em, a lot of the money gets in, and then it's like these bad beats. But really, horse, for most of those hands to get to the river, you know, in a limit game, really, it's not like, oh, yeah, you did catch the 4-outer, you know. But, I mean, you know what I mean? It's tough. So I think we played a lot. And we played a lot of Chinese poker, too.
Yeah. And I was happy the first night, because I came into the room a little late. You were sitting there playing with our poker room manager, and he brutalized you.
Oh, it was
remarkable. Probably the biggest Chinese poker beatdown in history.
I don't know. I mean, I literally, and I even showed him my hands, and he looked them over because he's very good.
Yeah.
His name's Ramsey, and he's very good at Chinese poker. He's been playing it for 10 years, and And he's like, dude, really, there's nothing you could do with these hands. And he was like looking at him. So I didn't feel bad. I just felt like, all right, I'm done. And the other thing, too, was when you play heads up only and you play two hands each, you're playing against hand, against hand, against hand. And I'm like, I had no idea. I thought we were playing, like, you know, 1 point here, 1 point there, 1 point there. He's like, yeah, you owe me $14 at that. $14 on one hand? Dollar a point? How could that be? But sure enough, he showed it to me, and there's a way. So I was like, I'm not playing it this way anymore. I want to play four-handed with four people, or, you know, or two-handed, two people. Yeah. So then I was okay. But, yeah, he absolutely brutalized me. And then I went and said, screw it. I'm going to go play regular poker. And then you sat down. I'm icy, and then the fortune has turned around.
Yeah, I had to fight really hard. I mean, the funniest thing about this was Ramsey was like, it was not so much that he took that much off of you. It was like how quickly it happened.
Yeah, 8 minutes.
A dollar point.
It was like 8 minutes I lost almost.
It was like a turbo tournament.
it was the most insane turbo tournament. It was crazy. But really, it was like 12 minutes, and I lost like $42 or something playing a dollar a point.
Which is crazy.
It was like six hands. I
sat down, and I had to hang in there, fight tooth and nail for 2.5 hours to eke out an $8 profit against him. And I tell you, I was exhausted after that. I mean,
yeah.
And then we played a little bit more last night, too, and when we had a dealer given him. So you didn't even have a break between hands.
Yeah.
You set your hand, you put it down, you paid off people, and there's another deck right in front of you. And wow, I mean, I had a headache after it.
I felt so grown up when I had a dealer dealing me Chinese poker. I felt like a grown-up poker player when you have an official dealer dealing the game for you and you're paying the points off, and it was pretty cool. One of the things I think that we should do is a Chinese poker show in the future.
Oh, absolutely.
Even though it's not real poker, it is, and people think, oh, it's just a matter of getting cards, it's luck. And I felt that way for the longest time, but especially when you're playing four-handed, there's a lot of skill involved in how to set the hands and whether you should play the hand, because they have surrendering and things like that, and you're trying to wrap up at least 2 points so you know you're not going to have to lose money, and there is a lot of skill to it. So I think one day we'll have a show dedicated to Chinese poker. What do you think?
Yeah, it's great. I mean, if we were telling people last night, I mean, there was somebody that hadn't played, he sat down and watched a little bit, and I was telling him, like, you know, it's a great game to learn because you can break it out quickly. You can play it two-handed if you have to.
Yep.
You can play it three-handed or four-handed. You can take a deck on an airplane and play because you only need chips. You can just take a little, you know, pad of paper and keep score.
Yep.
It's a real good game to do real quickly, unlike a lot of other poker games where you kind of need a few more people to really enjoy it.
Absolutely. Matter of fact, my parents play Chinese poker when they're in a doctor's office waiting for, like, to see a doctor or waiting for results or whatever. They play each other in Chinese poker when I taught it to them. So it's a good time killer, and it just keeps you sharp. It keeps you thinking about poker and strategy and stuff. It really does. So we had a lot of fun. Then we played it again last night. We actually played four-handed, and I did much better. I feel like I played better in that.
A little more strategy.
Yeah, a little more strategy.
Yeah.
And I ended up getting about half my money back in that, so that felt pretty good. But I really do. I enjoyed it, and I just did it. Last cruise, they were playing it, too, and I avoided it because I was afraid to lose. But this time, I was like, you know what? I'm already losing a bunch of money anyway. I want to have some fun, try to play Chinese poker, see how good I am or how bad I am at it. And I had a lot of fun.
Tonight, we'll move you up to the big leagues and play Deuce to Seven in the middle.
And that's what I actually recommended that. And firsthand, Ramsey set his middle hand by Deuce to Seven, but he forgot that we had said high only. So that helped me win a point, which I was grateful for. In the beginning there, but you know, one of the things that happened this week too, we did have some tournaments.
Mm-hmm.
We had some smaller buy-in tournaments. We were going to set them up as satellites, so we thought, no, let's just make them regular tournaments, let the people choose what they want to do with their money. So it was a $50 buy-in. The first one I lasted for like, I don't know, half an hour, and I was like, you know, I shoved on a bad hand and got called by a pair and didn't match up, so I was knocked out. But the second one I did pretty well. I was a pretty big leader early on. I actually made the final table as a chip leader. But I want to talk about the structure of the tournament, right, and how, you know, all the skill in the world will help you in the beginning, but at the end, you really need to get lucky and pick your spots. And there were times where, I mean, I got to the final seven players, and they paid three spots. I was the chip leader, and I was out in fifth.
Mm-hmm.
And it was all because of the structure. And I think that you need to think about how to really, sometimes you don't call with it. Maybe you shouldn't, I don't know, what do you think? Like, there was a hand where I had pocket sixes, and I was the chip leader, and a medium stack, maybe almost, I guess maybe short stack, it could have been considered short stack, probably had 10 big blinds left, shoved, and I looked down at pocket sixes, and I was on the button, and I called,
uh-huh,
and the person turned over ace-jack, and on the river made a straight. So that cut my stack pretty significantly, enough that I wasn't chip leader anymore, because the blinds were so high, but I was still chip leader, you know, at the time. And then a couple more hands later, same kind of thing came up. I had pocket, No, it was an ace-queen. I had ace-queen. Someone else shoved, another medium. No, actually a real short stack. This is what happened. It was a really short stack. I was in the blinds. I was a small blind, and I called the all-in with ace-queen suited. And then the big blind wakes up and shoves, and it's like another 4,000 chips. Now, the original call that I called was like 8,000, and I had like 35,000 or something at that time. So now it's another 4,500 to call. So I call that person. He had queens. So I was up against queens and pocket fives with my ace queen. I didn't hit any. And that just crushed me. And I'm really struggling with structures lately. Like when we played in the horse tournament, that big horse tournament, mm-hmm. I could take my time and think about it and really pick my spots. But no matter how well you play in one of these turbo type things, it doesn't matter at the end. It's
well,
quite frustrating.
I think almost every tournament has a point where the structure gets a little weird. It may not be at the end. I think in the horse, there was a definite spot maybe 4 or 5 hours in where not a lot of people were out, but the limits had hit a point where a lot of people were under pressure.
Yeah.
And I think you gotta, I mean, I know the best players do this, and I think this is what we need to learn, is trying to figure out where that spot is in the tournament and how best to combat it. I mean, usually it is at the end, you know, when you get to the final table and you only have so many big blinds on the table. At that point, you know, you got to do what you can to make it less bingo, but it's still going to be bingo. But sometimes it's early on, and I think that's really, really key. It's not just looking at the structure when you sit down before you start a tournament, but really start to kind of pay attention to the things. I mean, obviously on a cruise, like, we don't have a big screen here with, you know, average chips in play and number,
but most
of the big tournaments do, and really pay attention to that. I mean, I spend a lot of time in tournaments looking at it, and I still haven't quite figured out what it all means, but I take it in and then try to figure out by my own stack whether we're getting to a point where not just am I in trouble, but are a lot of other people in trouble, and try to take advantage of it.
Yeah, and that's why people, the professionals, and they come up with things like M and Q, and to help you simply decide, okay, I'm in a position where I need to call or need to shove, and because my M is this or my Q is that or whatever it is. And I think that I was kind of hampered by that in our tournament, because we just didn't really have, it was a smaller tournament, so we didn't have the big screen up and all that to really look at when the blinds were going up next and whatever. But, you know, you look down at a pocket pair, your chip leader, you know somebody who's desperate over there, they're not going to have a pair. And I made the right decision. I was ahead on that one. But then the queen's hand, where I had no idea the big blind was going to wake up with queens behind me.
Right.
Otherwise, it would have been a race. I would have been behind, but I knew it was a race. So either way, I mean, I think I made the right decision, but ultimately it cost me the tournament. I mean, you were at my first table. I literally destroyed that first table.
Yeah.
And I was feeling so good about it. There were some players I was out playing. There were other players I was picking up the hands when I needed to pick them up. And I got lucky in one hand. That's usually what you need. You need to get lucky in a spot where you make a mistake. You need to outplay somebody. You need to pick up hands against other people who have hands. And I did that. I had a really good stack. Got to the final table, and I lost. I mean, I didn't make any money, and that just sent me spiraling. After that, I went to cash games and spewed a bunch of chips there. And I really should have just relaxed and said, it's a $50 tournament, big deal, and go on the deck and wear my Sonny Crockett outfit.
Yeah.
But instead, you know, I sat at a cash game, kind of ticked off, and ended up dumping a bunch of chips there, and I shouldn't have done it, you know. So, I don't know. I don't know how to combat the bingo phenomenon. I really don't.
I think the biggest thing is recognizing when you get to that point, which I think you probably did. But, I mean, that's the thing I think a lot of people miss, is not recognizing where you're at it. And then the second thing is try to figure out how to play better with it.
Yeah.
But, I mean, sometimes, you know, we get into bingo, I mean, we have this thread going on the forum about 2-4 limit, and I don't know how to beat 2-4 limit.
Yeah.
And I don't really think anybody knows how to beat 2-4 limit.
Right.
So I'm sure some people try to tell me.
Which is funny, though, because our home game is 2-4 limit, essentially.
Yeah, that's right. Different, though. It's different. I mean, it's a 2-4
limit
with quality players.
Quality players, yeah. Okay.
It has nothing to do with the structure. It just has
has
more to do with the players that it attracts.
Yeah, you're right. But anyway, so you should really be thinking about that, you know, I always say that on the show, too. Just because you're the chip leader doesn't mean you have to be the person that, the sheriff. But, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I had pocket sixes on one of those hands. You have to, and it's funny, the guy I wanted to knock out, I know doesn't like to chop or play the bubble or whatever.
Yeah.
I wanted to get him out of the tournament so bad. And that goes back to a couple episodes before where we're saying don't target one player, you know, because it affects your game. But I had sixes, and he went all in. I could afford it. I called, and he hit, and he ended up winning the tournament ultimately. And if I had knocked him out, I probably would have won the tournament. So it was frustrating. It was very frustrating. But, recognize when it's going to become bingo and play accordingly. And maybe I do lay the sixes down there, and I don't know. But I think if I did it again, I probably would still call. I don't know. But I wasn't lucky, Scott. I got very unlucky.
No, you were not lucky because there's no such thing as luck.
There's no such thing as luck in poker.
That comes courtesy
at all.
Of, yeah, that comes courtesy of one of our dealers, a younger dealer, still in school, and you know, a real smart kid. He's got a lot going on in his mind. He's thought about a lot of things, and but he started this discussion at the table that luck does not exist, Chris.
At all, Scott.
Yeah.
Now I'm a big proponent of saying that luck. There's skill in poker, and it's not all luck. You know, as my dad would say, you know, it's all luck. And we had this discussion at dinner, too, with another couple, not even with him, the young guy. And he was saying that basically because the variance has the smaller stat for the underdog hand and the larger number for the favored hand, the mere fact that that smaller statistic exists means that it's not luck. It's just variance playing the way it's supposed to play, and it happened at that moment when you were in a hand. And he's saying that there's no luck. But what? And then he started assigning it to saying that person is lucky. And no, and we weren't trying to say that. We were trying to say that on any given hand, the fact that person was fortunate that variance hit him properly there, fortunate translates to luck, and luck means that in that hand he was lucky in that hand. But he just wouldn't let it go, and he was taking it too mathematically, I think, and we were taking it more philosophically or whatever. And now we were starting to get into, hey, the word luck exists in the English dictionary. Give me the definition for the word luck then. And he couldn't do it, really. So it's fascinating to talk to him, and it's fascinating to hear that. And the other thing that was fascinating was we had another young internet pro who's the same age kind of thing, same brilliant mind kind of thing, and he believes in luck and mysticism and all this stuff, and they're going at it, and it's just I really wish we had a recorder going while they were talking.
Yeah, it was fascinating.
It was fascinating conversation, but I have to disagree that they're, when they say there's no luck in the world at all.
Yeah.
That doesn't make sense to me.
Well, I think what ultimately it came down to, and even though he said it wasn't semantics, but I think it did come down to the semantics.
Yeah.
I mean, because, I mean, your big point was that the word luck exists, lucky, luck, all that kind of stuff exists, and you have to attach something to it. And then what he was trying to say was that the concept of luck doesn't exist regardless of whether somebody calls it lucky or not.
Right.
So a lot of that's a little headbutting semantics.
Yeah.
But the conversation actually went deeper than that, I think. So probably not doing it justice talking about it on the show right now, because you really had to see the back and forth.
And have him on the show, probably.
Right, right. But I'll be interested, you know, maybe we'll get something going on the forum about, you know, luck, and of course it'd have to be a philosophical discussion. So,
yes.
So
yes.
Rand and Gundam won't be involved, but you know, it really was very, very fascinating. And to think that some there's people out there that say there's no such thing as luck, and you got people that say, you know, well, poker's a game of skill, that's a different class, and then people that say everything is lucky.
Yeah, and forgive me for this, because I it's coming up on the top of my head now, and I don't remember, but there are people who believe in destiny.
Right,
right, right, and then there are people who believe that, you know, you don't know what's behind door number three or whatever, and he is a religious
studies major,
so I wonder if that was coming into play too. Believe maybe there's a religion out there that he was studying that says, you know, everything is predetermined, everything is destined, so it can't be luck. It has to be, that's the way it was supposed to be, you know. And I don't know. It was fascinating, but you know, the other thing too is that we talked so much about it, it's hard to even concentrate on your cards because we're sitting there talking about this. And I think that might have been part of his game plan too.
Because
he loves to talk at the table. But I've always been the one that said luck exists in poker in any given hand, but in the long run, it's skill. But I do believe that there is the luck, and there, luck meaning that you were fortunate that something happened your way when it's statistically not supposed to. That many, you know what I mean? But then when you say that to him, he says, but it is supposed to happen this amount of times. So when it does happen to you, that's one of the times. And it's not luck. It's intriguing. And it's like trying to come up with how the world started, you know?
Right.
You know, what started it? What began it? And you can go crazy trying to figure out how the universe began. So it was really interesting, really philosophical, and it was hard to believe it was a poker table that day.
Yeah,
right.
It
really was.
It was like we're at the library or something.
Yeah, we were having this, and we had other conversations that were just as deep about other things. And I'm like, is this really, you know? And then the last thing I said was, if the Brady Bunch crashed in the Andes, you know, who would they eat first? That was how I tried to, you know, we're trying to like, okay, let's get back to poker. That was my way of saying it, you know, but we just couldn't do it. And but it's very interesting. I would like to see this on the forum and see what people think about luck versus no luck, not luck versus skill. Luck versus no luck, and whether it really is. It was very interesting.
Right. Well, I am a firm believer in luck. because
I know where this is going.
We survived driving from Tampa to Fort Lauderdale in your CRV, pulling 2 tons of poker equipment in a U-Haul. I got there safely, got on the ship. Literally, when I got in the truck, I said, you know, this just might be it. I'm just going to enjoy the ride. Just get out of our misery. Somehow, we moved into that alternate dimension, and you got us here safely.
And your bladder survived, too, by the way.
That was the other lucky thing, is not only did we survive, but I didn't have to go to the hospital with a bladder infection.
Scott was so bad. We're driving, and you got to imagine our day, okay? We spent the whole day loading the thing up, and it's a 5.5 hour drive, you know, when you're going to speed limit, which right. we don't normally do. But when you're towing this thing, my car doesn't go any faster than 65 at the max. I had to, you know. So we had just gone and had dinner, like 20 minutes before this, or even an hour before this. And so we're on this, Scott's like, we're like 15 minutes from where we gotta go. And Scott's like, hey, bud, look, rest area. I'm like, dude, hold it. We've been driving for 5.5 hours. We had dinner. We got 15 minutes to go. We are not stopping. And he was quiet the rest of the way after that.
Oh, man. Well, you know, our Florida people will understand this. There's this road called Alligator Alley. It crosses the Florida Everglades, right?
Yeah.
And for people that haven't been here, I mean, you can just imagine. You're on a road that's going over swamps. They got fences to keep the alligators from eating your cars when you're driving. So there's not a lot of civilization on this about 2 hour stretch of road.
Right.
There's like one exit and like two rest areas. And I totally missed the first rest area, and I wasn't going to make you get off an exit. But after that point, I was like, oh, my golly, I am in pain here. Please let there be one more rest area before you get there. And finally, I look up. I'm like, whoa, light came down. Rest area, next stop. And I'm like, dude, we're doing that. And you're like, dude, no way. And I thought you were just busting me. But no, flew right past it.
Well, you didn't really say it seriously, though.
Man, like, I had my legs crossed. I was like, oh.
Your eyeballs were floating.
Absolutely.
You were just sort of like, hey, bud, rest area. Like that. And I'm like, no, dude, we're not getting off the rest area. But if you had said, no, really, dude, I'm in a lot of pain. I need to stop. I would have stopped. But you said it casually.
I'll tell you what, though. On the drive home, you're going to have to drop me off at the hospital there for parched mouth. Because I'm not drinking a thing on this trip home.
Somehow I don't believe
you. You and I were taking a little bottle on there, and I'm just going to tell your wife to turn around so I can fill it up. You're creating this monster.
Well, that's the other thing, too. You know, we're at the restaurant. You have, like, 3 sodas. We stop to get gas. You go and buy another soda. We just came out of dinner.
I like to be hydrated.
Yeah, well, now you're going to have your bladder inspected because there's no reason for you to drink 4 sodas when we have an hour-and-a-half drive left or whatever it was. So I didn't stop, man. But when we did stop, we stopped at the Holy Roller Hilton.
Yeah, and that's my nickname for this.
Yeah, it was a great place, though.
Absolutely phenomenal place. I'm probably going to stay there all the time in Fort Lauderdale. And in fact, actually, I mentioned to people on the cruise, I'm like, you know, it's a little weird, but if you get past the weirdness, it's a great, cheap place to stay in Fort Lauderdale where there's not a lot of great, cheap places.
Yeah.
A lot of cheap places. Actually, a few cheap places.
Right, but there are a lot of cheap places that are
yeah, and most of them are not great.
Right.
So.
This place was clean, huge.
Absolutely.
We got upgraded because they ran out of the room we were going, but my room and your room, huge. We had an apartment.
Yep.
It was literally an apartment. There was a stove, a fridge, a whole huge living room with big oversized leather couches and love seats, two big queen-size beds. The shower was kind of weird, though. What it is, it's a converted hospital. And the shower area was kind of weird. There was, like, a toilet and stall. There was a stand-up. It was kind of small and weird. You couldn't open the door without, like, flushing or something. I don't know. It was really kind of odd. But other than that, it was pretty awesome.
Yeah, the name of the place was Forum, and we were looking for a place just to spend the night, and it's so expensive down here. For one night, I'm like, oh, my gosh, we just need a bed, right?
Yeah.
And I find this place is like $60, $65.
Yeah.
Like, what's wrong with this? So I started doing the reviews, and it's a converted hospital, and it's owned by some kind of religious mission or something, and it's subsidized by that. But you don't have to, you know...
It's not like you have to sign go there and pray or anything.
Yeah,
you just go and it's a regular hotel, but they have like... Like, it's a desk out by the lobby that has some religious pamphlets or whatever, and then, like, you know, in some of the hallways, there's pictures of children or whatever, you know, just to remind you of some stuff. But really, I mean, it's not like they're going to come talk to you or try to convert you into something, yeah, or, you know, there was no cult or anything. It's just a room. It was, yeah, just a nice hotel.
Massive
place. Big parking lot, so we could park our trailer and everything without any worries. And, you know, the best part for me was get to the room, and I look in the shower, and there's, like, no shampoo. And I said, oh, you know, this is a converted hospital, and it's kind of a unique situation. I wonder if they don't provide it. That's going to stink. So I called down to the desk, and she says, oh, yeah, you just have to come down to the desk and get it. We don't have a huge staff or anything. I said, oh, okay. I go down there. They had the little mini products of exactly what I use at home. You know, I use that Pert 2-in-1, you know. They had a little mini bottle of it. Gene uses Pantene conditioner. They had a little bottle of it. It was a godsend, you know, pardon my pun there, because Gene forgot her conditioner for the trip, and she needed it because she has long hair. And it was awesome. She had this little box. He's like, hey, pick from the box, whatever you want, and take two. It was just great. And of course, the elevators are huge. Yeah. It's a converted hospital, and they got to be able to put, like, the huge gurneys in there. So we got all our bags in there. Everybody was in there. There was plenty of room, and it was a lot of fun. But you had a funny story about the elevator, too, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, they had three elevators. One was broken, and then... we got there late the first night. I went up and down three or four times, no problem. Next morning, I go down. I push the down button, and I'm hanging out with another couple there, and the elevator dings up, and they get in, and then they're shouting out, "You coming?" I'm like, "No, I'm going down." They're like, "Oh, so are we?" Okay. And the door closes, and I'm like, So I get in there, and because even though the arrow on the outside was going down, when you get it, or up
going
when you
up,
go
yeah.
inside, it's going down. So yeah, you can't trust the lights on it. But, you know, hey, small price to pay.
No, and they're working on all that. They just really converted just a little while ago, so.
But I'll tell you this, too. The shower was great practice for the shower on the cruise ship.
Yeah.
As tight as it was, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, I talked at the home game last week. I want to kind of, trying to get some kind of prop bed set up here for to kind of lower my cholesterol. And not so much lose weight, but I just figure if I lower my cholesterol by nature,
yeah,
I'm going to lose a few pounds, right? I will tell you right now, Chris, I've determined that I will never be obese. Because even without a prop bed, because I got into the little Clark Kent shower we have here on the cruise ship, and I reached down to pick up the washcloth, and I could barely fit my... body down there to get it, and I determined at that point I am not going to be the guy who gets stuck in the cruise ship shower and has to bang on the wall for Ruben or cabin steward to come let me out.
It's
if I
hilarious.
Get in there and I realize I'm getting that fat, I am going to be up on the jogging track the entire cruise.
You have to imagine these shower stalls for a minute. Now, it's like a round tube. And you close the doors like you would close drapes, you know, that one from the left, one from the right, and they seal you up. It's almost like I want to close them, and I'm like a human mail room, you know, in an office building where you close and you look up, and all of a sudden you get shot straight up into the tube, you know. It's that tight of a fit in there. And that's a decent-sized cabin we have, too. It's not like it's, you know, down with the steerage.
Right, right.
You know, and it is, and I know exactly what you're talking about. There's two places in the world you don't want to drop the soap. And one is prison.
Oh, and you know how there's little things shut, like you said. You know, they're like, it's just like, exactly, like you said, like little drapes, right?
Right.
So I got in there, got the water at the temperature that I could survive at.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Because you can't really pinpoint it. And I went to shut it. It only went halfway.
Ooh.
I'm like, what's going on here? It's like, so, of course, you know I'm a guy, right? So
right.
I have to assume that it's just broken, right?
Yeah,
if I just apply enough pressure, it's going to fix it. So I was just banging the hell out of this thing, and I'm like, what the hell? It's not working. So I get out, and that's when I realized that I needed to shut both.
The other side, yeah. Sliding glass doors meet in the middle, buddy. You can't pull them all the way. They don't grow legs and walk to the other side of the room. You have to make them meet in the middle.
Oh, man.
But, you know, one of the reasons you go on a cruise, not for the shower stalls, not for the food, although we did eat a lot of food, was for the trips and for the excursions. And I had never been to Jamaica. I had chances to go in the past, didn't go. I actually had a free trip to go and lost the paperwork to it, didn't go. Couldn't find the phone number to call. So I didn't want to get off the ship because Jamaica has a reputation for people just harassing you and making it miserable for you. And I thought, why should I go through that? You know, I just want to relax on this vacation. But Jeannie really wanted to go. And she wanted to see, like, Dunn's River Falls. And you're like, yeah, you know, I want to do something on the ship. If you guys are going to do it, I'll do it. And I was like, and then Gene's like, well, I want to go on this bobsled thing. It's the Jamaican bobsled ride. And I was like, I am not going on a ride built in Jamaica for the bobsled. You know, it's probably going to be this rusted old rickety thing that they have in the bobsled team back in 88 or whatever the hell the year was. And Scott's like, no, I want to do that too. Let's do that. So
outnumbered again.
I was outnumbered again, and I signed up, and I was very, very glad I did. Weren't you?
It was amazing.
It was really remarkable.
The best shore excursion of all the cruises I've ever taken.
It was absolutely remarkable.
And the good thing is that we're coming back here in December. If you like what we're going to talk about here, book the December cruise, and then you can do the same thing.
I got to admit, though, the best part for me, okay, I've been telling everyone that who was asking that the best part was the bobsled.
Right.
But I really have to admit now that the best part was the ski lift that they take you up to the bobsled in. Because little known fact, my Klavan moment here, little known fact, Scott Long is afraid of heights. So when you're up there in this really scary, not exactly secure
not
seat.
Not secure at all. And gust, you know, the wind, and we're dust in the wind.
I mean, this man was as pale as that kid in Powder. You know that movie, Powder? Scott was just ghost white, gripping, white-knuckling the little handle, and he would not look down. And I'm like, Scott, look at the flower down there. Scott, look how far down that drop is. And then I'm kind of rocking it a little bit, and he was just like, he was hilarious on this trip. People were like, hey, you have a good time? And Scott's like, no, not so much. I mean, he was really talking like that. He wasn't joking. This was the most delightful thing I have ever gone through with you, because it was a beautiful view. You could see, like, the beautiful blue water, the forest, and it was just a perfect day. The weather has been absolutely beautiful.
I'll give it that.
Yeah. And we're going up this thing, and I'm just like, because I'm not afraid of heights at all. And Gene's fine, too. Gene's not afraid of heights. And there's so much to look at, you know, because even the tour guide was really good, and she's telling us on the ride over, look for these flowers, look for these animals, look for these butterflies. So every time I would see one, I'd be like, Scott, look! And I kind of like jerk the seat a little bit, and he'd be hanging on. He's like, cut it out! And but the ride down was better for you. The
ride down was much better.
Because you're getting closer to the ground.
That helped a little bit. Yeah. That, and also I was just exhilarated by this bobsled.
Yes.
So this whole thing is called Mystic Mountain. It's an attraction. It's only 2 years old, so it wasn't here the last time my wife and I came down. But really a great place. I mean, nice nature and scenery when you first come in.
Yep.
Then you got this glider from death thing that you got to take up. And they got zip lines. They got a little water slide that goes into an infinity pool. You're like, I don't know how many stories.
Vanishing edge, yeah.
Yeah.
And we were way to hell.
You're like looking over to the whole bay. It was gorgeous. A nice little, you get free lunch.
Yep, free lunch. And, jerk chicken, baby.
Nice little bar. And then they have this bobsled thing, which I was like, I'm like, all right, I'm in Jamaica. I'll do the bobsled thing. You know, it's all cool runnings. I feel like I should try it.
Yeah, yeah.
But I wasn't at all prepared for how cool it was.
Yeah, I had no idea what to expect. And kind of the photo that I saw online was really misleading. It kind of looked like it was like, it like really was like this little box.
Yeah.
And like a handbrake on the right that may or may not work because they had it from the mining days of, you know, yesteryear or something. And I was so afraid that it was going to be this. And I mean, I'm not a big ride guy. I'm not afraid to go on rides. I just don't prefer them. But when we got there, it was state of the art. And it was your own personal little, and it looked like a bobsled, but you sat in it.
I had number 31.
I don't even know my number.
Why? You know what number?
I think it was 6, but I'm not sure.
I got totally into it, man. I was immersed.
I think I was
like the
6.
John Candy of the.
you have this thing where there's two handles on the side of each, one on each side of you, and they control the brake or the not accelerator, but if you lean forward with them, it releases it completely, and there's no stopping you. If you put it in the middle, you can slow it down. If you pull it all the way back, it'll brake you until you stop. And I have to admit, you and I, we didn't use the brake once.
No, we just
leaned forward and let it go. And there's no like big loops or anything like that. It's just more of a spiral and then some drops.
Yeah.
And it was absolutely phenomenal. So I mean,
G's around the side.
Yeah, absolutely adrenaline rush. And I was literally smiling the whole way. I really thought I was gonna be miserable, and instead I had this huge grin on my face. And we have proof of it.
Yeah, yeah.
They take those pictures of you, and I didn't know one was coming. I was just laughing and smiling, and sure enough, when you see the photo of me, I got this huge grin on my face going down this huge incline. And there's a photo. I hope Scott posted enough.
It'll probably be on Facebook.
And it'll probably be in the magazine. There is a photo of Scott. You have got to see this photo. He looks like he is about... He's like... I swear to God, it looks like you're kamikaze. Like, you're like literally going down and like... Ah! He's got this look on his face. Like, he just absolutely wants to kill somebody in front of him. At the same time, enjoying the fact that he's about to kill somebody in front of him. This look on his face is hilarious.
Oh, man. Yeah, I never fall for these tourist trap. These places take your photo everywhere.
Yeah,
and then you get to the end, like, ooh, you want the little photo in the frame?
Yeah.
$15. And I got off that one. As soon as I, you know, I was going down that hill, and I saw the picture snap, and I'm like, that's good.
I'm getting it.
I walked in that room, and they showed me it. And I'm like, how much is it? And they're like, 15. I'm like, here's a 20. Keep the 5. Give that to me. It was a great photo.
It was hilarious.
And I had a blast. So, but definitely, we highly encourage you to come on the December cruise, and you can go to Mystic Mountain as well, too. And then of course, we followed up by going to Duns River Falls, which I've been to before, and you hadn't been.
I hadn't been there, of course.
But a great natural wonder there.
Incredible.
And, I enjoyed it as much this time as I did last time. Probably won't go again, because it's one of those things you only can do.
They baptized me.
Twice. They did.
Yes,
I saw that.
Yes, they, because the guy was getting pretty annoyed that I wouldn't do any of the things that he wanted me to do. Like, he kept saying, hey, Mon, come over here. And I was like, no, that's all right, I'm cool, you know, because the water was cold, but once you were in it long enough, and they were pretty funny, they would splash people, you know, so, hey, you want to try not to avoid, well, too bad, you're going to get wet, but ultimately, he's like, no, you're coming over here, Mon, come over here, and he grabbed me and turns me around, and he goes, I'm going to baptize you, and he pulls me, and I fall backwards into this huge pool, and it was a lot of fun, and you did the slide one, there's one
where
you do the
slide.
And it really is remarkable. 903 feet from bottom to top,
yep.
Climbing pure rocks over waterfalls.
Rushing water.
And it's dangerous. It really is dangerous. You could literally
die. There is stuff that it's makes it dangerous.
Right.
There are kids running up with bare feet,
yeah.
Making us look like idiots.
Yeah. No, I mean, but you really could slip.
You're not near
kids.
It's not like, you know, these bird gliders people I saw on the TV in the cabin this morning, but they just jump off mountains.
No, I saw that too, 60 Minutes.
It's not dangerous like that, but yeah. I mean, it's got a little danger to it. But if people haven't heard of it, Duns River Falls, I'm sure you can go on the web and you'll see what we're talking about. Pictures will do a lot better.
It was pretty cool, though, and just a great day overall, completely. And the other thing, too, when we mentioned at the top of this topic was, you know, you worried about people harassing you. But when you get off the ship now, at Falmouth at least, you know, it was literally just people being nice to you. No one was selling anything. And they take you right to, especially if you book your excursion through the ship, they take you right to the bus. You get on an air-conditioned bus, and it takes you right to the place. And you get right on. This was right at the thing. They had some cultural things, but you went on the bobsled. And you did the ride, had your lunch, then you went right back onto the van again, took you to Duns River Falls, and then once you get through the falls, then you start to hit some of the stuff that they make you try to avoid. But Scott and I put it together that the parking lots here, they have a million exit signs pointing all different ways to try to get you to go
through.
None of
them are right.
None of them are right. We said, you know what? In geometry in high school, they said the shortest distance between two points is a straight line. I know that's where our van is. I'm walking this way, and I'm just going to ignore everybody. And it worked. We got through so fast. We were like, wow, that was easy.
Yeah.
Next thing you know, we're back on the ship and had a great day. It was a great, great day, and I was surprised. I really was. It was like the one stop of all of our cruises that I didn't want to do anything, and ended up doing it and loving it the most. Yeah, it was great.
Absolutely. Well, the other thing I loved on this cruise is we have a couple podcast listeners that came on, which is always great to actually meet people that listen to us when we can't see them, you know, in their cars, you know, crashing them into other cars or whatever they're doing when they listen to our show. And, you know, I get to meet Steve, one of my fellow Packer fans from Wisconsin. He kind of splits his time between Wisconsin and Florida.
Yeah.
But great time talking to him and his buddy. And then we, of course, we've talked about this on the show like 3 weeks in a row. Wes from Canada drove all the way down. Now, we had no idea, though, how far he was driving. I mean, I was thinking, all right, he's driving from Canada. Maybe it's, you know, near the border somewhere. You know, just they're going to take a leisurely drive. You know, look at the leaves.
Yeah,
do they have leaves now? I don't know. you know, stop at the world's second largest bowl of mud or something along the way and make a thing. No, they drove straight through. And the farthest person away, which I think was Wes, right?
Yes.
32 hours in the car away from Fort Lauderdale.
You know,
it took him 8 hours to get to his buddy's house where they picked up the rest of them. Still in Canada to drive the rest of the 25 hours.
Makes me feel bad that I didn't stop at the rest area for you.
Yes.
And that's the thing, too. It's like, you know, when you hear them coming from Canada, but the guy had to drive 8 hours within Canada just to get his friend to get going from Canada again to get here, and I was whining about going 5.5 hours across our state. It was remarkable that they made that effort, and they did it with a family of, I guess it was, six families total, combined, six total people, and they did it all in one vehicle across the country. And now they got to do it again on the way back. That's just remarkable.
I hope they had the windows down for a little bit of it. I can only imagine.
I tell you, I would, if I was going to do that, I mean, I would plan on like an entire vacation where it's like a month long thing where we take our time and see the sights in America and stuff. I just could not make that drive. You know, I mean, I guess I asked them, I said, why not just fly? And when you add it all up, you know, as far as airfares and stuff,
coming from Canada,
too,
it's probably too much. Taxes and stuff. But I mean,
but
hey, he was all in on this cruise.
And if we weren't grateful enough because he did that, the first night when we have our party, you know, we have our welcoming party, open bar, and everyone loves that. You know, all kinds of cool food and ice sculpture with the NEUP logo in it.
It was awesome.
It was really, really, really cool. And, you know, if that wasn't enough, Scott did a speech, and we did our little thing, and we talked about the poker room and stuff. We sit down and enjoy our drinks and everything, and Wes comes over, and he hands us two boxes, and he said, I wanted you guys to have these. And we'll just take it from there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm like, wow, thank you. We always appreciate what people give us.
Absolutely.
We open them up. It was amazing. It's a hand-carved, I don't know if it's hand, but hand-cut.
Yeah, hand-cut.
Ornament of the island where they live at.
Yep.
And I guess it's a hobby. I mean, a really intricate hobby. I could never do it. But he's been doing it for years. And I tell you, it's going to have a little proud spot on the Long Family.
Absolutely. And like, what he did was he gave me, in YouTube, it's a wood cutout of exactly the shape of the island that they live on. But then the other ornament was like a butterfly, and the wings on this butterfly were the island, in the shape of the island.
It was amazing.
It was just absolutely remarkable, and something I'll cherish forever. I mean, I know I have Aquaman's beer on the shelf, and I have the four decks, the four color decks, and the things that people have given us because
they got a slice of pizza that's really
that's right. It's still there.
Wife is annoying because it's growing mold.
It started out as cheese, but now it's blue cheese. I mean, it's always special when people send us stuff like that. I've got the R30 from Rant that he gave me the video, and you've still got the Johnny Walker.
My bottle, Johnny.
You know, and so I mean, stuff like that really means something to us because for them to think of us. You know what I mean? And I know that we helped them through a lot of things, too, with commutes or whatever it is. It was really special to me. I was speechless. All I kept saying was, oh, my God, thank you. I can't believe it.
Yeah, I left it open in my cabin for a while, too, just to kind of, you know, walk by and remind me of just how generous some people are.
I put it in the safe. I put it in the safe. I did not want any chance of even taking it and going, oh, this is garbage and throwing out the box.
Yeah.
I put it in the safe. I will cherish it forever, and it will always be on my trees. And I really appreciate it. So that was really cool. That was just a little sidetrack here, but that was really a great moment.
Actually, like we owe him something for driving 32 hours.
I know. That's true.
Maybe we'll go home and maybe you can like sand a chip for him or something.
You know what? He can just take it from the poker room. It's already sanded. That one's for you, Wes. Take a chip from the poker room home with you, and it was sanded just for you.
All right. Well, we're a reminder, if you like, while we're talking about the cruise, the next one coming up will be August 29th. It is our cheapest of the year, a four-nighter out of Port Canaveral going to the Bahamas, making two stops. That is $369 a person based on double occupancy. Go to antiupmagazine.com/cruise. We'll be taking bookings for that very soon. And then, of course, if you'd rather wait for the 7-day, or actually you want to do both.
Do both.
Don't wait.
Yeah.
Do both.
Yeah, twice as good.
We're going to be doing one December 10th out of New Orleans. Like we said, it's a 7-nighter going back, making three stops, one of them to Falmouth, Jamaica, so you can go get your own bobsled photo.
Elizabeth, and you are listening to the Antiup Poker Cast. All right, I have to admit, you have been pretty coy about this hand, and you know, we had breakfast together, and I was like, "How'd you do last night?" And you told me, and then you said, "There's this one hand that I had the two smartest guys at the table going back and forth about what I had to have on this hand, and they were wrong." So I'm really intrigued by this hand, and I want to hear what happened, and give me all the specifics.
I can't remember. Did I tell you what I had already? Did I split the fries?
No,
I did not.
No, that's what I'm saying. I'm trying because you said you didn't. You said there was one hand you were really proud of it, and you did something. You had a big. You won us something. I don't know if you won or not. I can't really remember, but. You didn't tell me anything, so I said you're being coy about it. You didn't really tell me anything about it.
I thought I spilled the beans to one of them the next morning.
No, I really
don't.
All right,
great. Well, we'll do this without me revealing my cards, and I'll add an extra level the complexity. But yeah. Even beyond that, I mean, it was a hand that I thought, not that it was a garden variety hand, because there obviously was some thought involved in it, but I finished it and I was racking my chips up, and then this conversation just breaks out between three people at the table, the two that were in the hand, although one of them wasn't so much, but then Kareem, our luck guy.
Right.
And it was just, to me, it was a massively amazing conversation just to listen to these guys talk about it.
Try to figure out what you have.
Not so much to figure out what I had, but also, you know, whether one of them could have done a different play and made it work. And at that point, I realized that it was probably a bigger hand than I realized at the time.
Yeah.
And it also reminded me that how much I need to learn. And that's the great thing about this cruise is, I mean, I've been playing No Limit. We played a lot of horse in Chinese, but I've been playing a lot of No Limit and playing against players that I know are better than me.
Yeah.
And I've had a couple of losing sessions, but a couple of really big winning sessions. So it's really good to work the mind out with players like that. So,
very cool.
So this is a hand with those people, and I won't reveal what I had, and then we can go back through, because I think it's interesting to play it through, at least for the two people's point of view. We never knew what the third person had here, but I'll set it up here. All right. So the three combatants in this hand were a guy, we'll just use their real names, Brent, who you know. He's dealt for us on the cruise before. He's on this cruise just as a player, though. Very good player. He plays high-level games that I can't even imagine playing in.
Right.
And, of course, he's a dealer and floor person. So he's around the game a lot.
He's the guy I try to knock out of the tournament.
Exactly.
Just to give you a little background. He's the guy that I want to knock out, yeah.
And I'll tell you a little bit. One of the things that I noticed in watching him is that he's really good at sensing weakness in players and making really large bets. He's not afraid to push chips in the pot because he knows, or at least he sized up the situation, knows if he puts that big bet in that people are probably going to fold and he's going to take it down nice spot and I'd have to show his card. So I noticed that a couple times. I'm not really big on the tells thing, even though with all Joe Navarro's help, but I do watch people and I pick up a couple of things. So that's what I picked up on Brent. Right?
Okay, yep.
And then the other combatant is our new columnist, Mike Wolf. Great guy. Came down last minute to come on the cruise. We had a blast with him.
Yep.
Very smart guy. Very and very good. He's only 22 and phenomenally good. And he prefers playing 2-5, no
one,
limit.
And one, yeah, 1-3 or 2-5. 1-3
or 2-5. And he makes his living at it.
Yep.
He's just real smart at that level. We even talked to him at dinner last night about why he doesn't play higher. And he's just really more comfortable at this level and thinks that he has an edge.
Yeah.
And he certainly does. I mean, he was just making racks and racks of chips this time. So, all right. So, Brent was in early position in this hand. I was on the baton. And Mike was in the small blind.
Okay.
And I think we probably had maybe, it might have been an eight-handed table at that time. So, there were other people.
It's 1-3, right? So
1-3, okay, no limit.
All right.
Stack sizes, I had about 425 in front of me, probably. Mike had me covered by a little bit more, probably 450 or so, let's say. Brent probably had about 220 or so, I'm guessing. Somewhere in that neighborhood.
Okay.
Before we started.
Right? Okay, yep.
All right, there were a couple limpers. I didn't actually pay attention to how many, but Brent was one of the limpers. He gets to me on the button, and I limp.
Okay.
Mike in the small blind makes it 30 to go.
Wow.
Pretty big bet, right?
Yeah.
Folds around to Brent, who makes the call.
Okay.
And then folds around to me, and I make the call.
Okay.
So three of us going to the flop.
You got about $100 pot now.
90 plus the big blind and the Olympers. So, about $100 in the pot.
Okay.
All right, flop comes 10-6 deuce, two spades.
Okay. Does it matter what spades, which ones are spades or no?
Let me try to think. I don't think it matters, but two of them were.
Okay. All right, well, I'll make the 10 and the deuce spades in honor of Doyle Brunson.
All right. 10-6 deuce, right?
Okay.
Mike checks, Brent checks, and it's on me.
Wow.
I put in a bet of $30.
Wow. This guy bets about a third of the pot.
Yep.
Okay. Wow.
Mike, who was obviously next to act, calls.
Calls, okay.
And he gets back to Brent, who makes it 110 to go.
Wow. What the hell?
See, I guess it is a better hand than
I can't get over the limp call 30 pre-flop. That's what I can't get over. Especially, like, if you have a hand here, if you have a hand here and Brent calls 30 and Mike made it 30, if you had a hand, I would think you'd make it 100. So what hand do you have to call 30 with? This is bizarre. And then they check the flop. How does Mike check that flop? Oh my goodness. And then Brent bets 110 because he doesn't. So he bet 50% of his stack. He bet more than 50% of his stack there because we had 220 and he bet about 30.
And those were rough.
Right, but also it's still about 50% right, regardless. After you had made a third pot bet, what the hell do you have?
All right, so it gets to me, and I take a little bit of time, and I shove.
And then you shove. Wow. All right, well, I can see the shove, because no matter what you have, because, again, you can't fold. If you're going to call, you can't, you know what I mean? You're not going to fold to another bet after that of 110,
right.
You know, or whatever he has left, 100. So I can see why you would shove. And I can't believe Brent has to be on a pure bluff here, then, if he's going to fold. If you fold, it's got to be a pure bluff. So, wow, and then you shove. So what?
All right, so I shove, and then Mike goes in the tank for like 4 cruises.
Oh, my God, really?
Talks about a bunch of things, murmurs under his breath. He knows how he does it.
Yeah, he's got his mannerisms, yeah.
And eventually, at the end of this long discussion, or in his mind, folds.
Okay.
And his cards no quicker hit the muck than Brent's hit the muck.
Wow.
And I rake in whatever that ends up being, a fairly nice spot that got me up for the cruise.
All right. So I have to try to put you on a hand now. That's the whole key to this,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, you can put everybody on a hand if you want, because that was kind of the discussion, because no one showed their cards.
Oh, my God. No one showed
their... I obviously know what I have.
Okay, well...
And I have what Mike told me he had.
Okay, so I'm not
going to... I can tell you what Brent said he had, though none of us believe him.
Okay. I'm going to say that Brent had nothing. I'm going to say Brent had something like Jack 10 or something weird, something that's not even remotely a pair. I'm really going to put him on that. I'm going to say Brent had nothing, rags. I'm going to say Mike had something like sevens. And you, I'd like to say you're bluffing. I really want to say you're bluffing, Scott. But with those two quality players, I know you're thinking Brent, you could probably get him off because he's very aggressive and a bluff would work on him. But I didn't know if you'd think it would work on Mike, especially since he called and raised preflop. I feel like you'd have to have something here. Oh, my God. It's a brilliant bluff if you bluffed, especially since you didn't think Brent could fold. You probably would think Brent couldn't fold for this. So you'd have to have some sort of hand, I would think. Wow, this is a brilliant bluff if you bluffed. Because you can't assume Brent's going to lay it down there for $100 more. So you have to think you're going to get called here. So you have to have something. Maybe you did a Cosenza and you had ace-10, or you did a Cosenza and you've shoved with a draw. Maybe you have a draw. Maybe you have, like, king-queen of spades. But you're risking your whole stack now against Mike. That's the thing. Wow, this is crazy. I don't know what to say here. All right, God, I just don't know you to bluff that much, especially since you did have some losing before this, so you probably want to rack up a win. All right, I'm going to say you had ace-10. I really want to say bluff, though, okay? But I don't want to be one of those hedging best flip-floppers like John Kerry, so, all right, I'm not a waffler, ace-10.
All right.
I know I'm wrong, though, right? I'm wrong. You're bluffing. I know I'm wrong. Damn it, I should have let my first instinct.
All right, so the big reveal.
What did Mike say he had?
Mike had, I believe he said King Jack of Spades.
Oh, okay.
So two overs and...
That's the hand I thought you might have had. Okay. All right, so...
And I believe him when he said that.
I was wrong there.
Because he was part of the longer discussion. Brent said he had 6 deuce.
Yeah, I don't believe that.
Yeah, we quickly
dismissed that. For $100, 2 pair? I don't believe that at all.
I had ace-10 of hearts.
Oh, I got the hand right? Are you serious? That makes a lot of sense. I just don't see you bluffing there. Yeah, you were absolutely right to make that move. Yeah, I don't see you bluffing there at all. You either had ace-10 or 2 spades and overs. I thought you had Mike's hand. Either Mike's hand or the hand I thought. Wow, you really did ace-10. I swear to God, I swear to Darwin, you did not tell me your hand. So that's awesome. That's a great move, man. Because you know Brent doesn't have 6 deuces.
Well, here's the thing. I made a lot of mistakes in this hand, too, I think, that I thought about later on. One, preflop, I don't think I'm calling 30.
yeah.
with Ace 10. Now, the only, what I was thinking was I was up against two really aggressive players who bluff a lot, and I figured if I'm not playing to hit the ace, I'm playing to hit, you know, some hearts, maybe the 10.
Yeah.
I mean, I kind of figured, I mean, now it's hard to put people on hands, but I figured that Mike was probably making that move with, like, an ace-queen, ace-king, that kind of hand, which, of course, makes it terrible for me to make that call. But if I hit my 10, then I know, I mean, these guys don't, I mean, Mike last night actually laid down a lot of hands, but before that, I thought he'd pay me off. Brent never lays anything down, usually. And then, so I guess that's why it was a very loose call, I think.
All right, well, the reason why I don't put Brent on six deuce is because he's in early position and he limps. He's not going to limp with six deuce early position.
And then call.
And then call a $30 bet when you are behind him still to act with a bigger stack than him, and Mike makes it 30 to go. There's no way he calls 30 with six deuce and limps with six deuce. I just don't put him on that. I believe he had something maybe a jack 10, but probably not. Maybe something like queen jack, I mean, or something, you know, but he probably wouldn't limp with that either. Maybe 8-9. You know, I don't put him on six deuce. Of course, you know, I lost money this month, so, but wow, that's a great, and because you know he's not going to fold. That's why, that was the reason why I went with ace 10, because if you bluffed, you know he's probably not folding. It was really remarkable that he folded, and he was just really trying to steal. There's no way he had six deuce there. There's not. And I really thought the way Mike played it, it could have been a small pair. You know, a $30 raise with King Jack is not, you know, a couple of limps in a $3 pot.
Yeah,
there's only nine in there. You know, but it's not really a bad raise either because it's 27 in the pot.
He's
really,
I mean, no one showed any aggression. And this is a table where most hands were being raised for opening for 10 or 11.
Yeah.
Every hand. When it's limped. You know, I mean, I guess you got somebody maybe trying to get cute, but other than that, I mean, I think he was just trying to lock up that hand,
yep.
the 38 bet, and knew that he could probably outplay us. If not. So when the flop came, a 10 is what I wanted hearts or a 10, because I figured at that point I thought my hand was good, the best.
Right.
And I was planning to raise whoever bet out, because I assumed they were going to bet. So I was surprised when it got checked around to me. Now, I didn't calculate the pot correctly, obviously, which is why I made a weak lead at it.
Yeah.
I mean, I really should have never put 30 in there into a pot of 100.
Of 100, no.
I should have put much more in there.
Like 60 or 70 at least.
So after I did that, and then Mike called, and he gets to Brent, and I knew that's what he was going to do, because that's what he keeps doing. So at that point, I knew that I definitely had the best hand, and I could get a stack because I could push. He's either going to fold, and I'll just take that money and be happy with it. Or if he called, you know, I still had top pair, top kicker, which is probably still really good.
Yeah.
And I was just going to have to fade his outs. I totally forgot that Mike was still in the hand, though.
Oh, man, yeah.
You know, that's the worst feeling in the world, to shove 450 into a pot, to squeeze a guy that has, like, 110 left. And then have a guy go, look at his stack. I'm like, oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
I could lose it all here just trying to get cute with this.
And it could look like he has jacks here by the $30 raise. You know,
he could have an overpay. He could have any kind of overpay at that point.
Yeah.
Although I think, I don't know why you wouldn't have bet out on the flop. And that was what the biggest discussion was, is that his missed opportunity was not betting out on the flop.
Yeah. Because
he couldn't represent any of those hands.
He bets the flop, and then Brent shoves. Now, do you think your ace 10 is good at that point?
Yeah, I'm going to lay it down.
You're going to lay it down at that point. So if he makes a big bet like 70, and then he goes in for 220, you can't call with just ace 10. So one person misplayed it, another person misplayed it, and you all misplayed it.
I think all three of us misplayed it.
Everybody misplayed it, and you're all really good poker players. It's really weird. Well, that's a really good hand. Really good hand. And I think the key for me was the 110. If Brent had more money than that,
absolutely,
you know, then I would say you might make a bluff.
Yeah,
but you could make a bluff. That's what made me lead to the ace 10, or, you know, I guess ace 10, because I don't think jack 10, king 10, or queen 10 makes sense here with the raise that you saw pre-flop. So that's why I thought ace 10 and suited.
Maybe probably, jack 10. I might get crazy with jack 10.
With jack 10, 30 bucks? Yeah, I don't know if I would bet 30.
But it was a loose call with ace 10.
Yeah, that's true.
I'd almost rather have jack 10 in that spot position than ace 10.
Wow, what a hand. So you ended up taking a huge pot there. You were up to 600 at that
point. Yeah, I think I ended up racking out up 400 or 450 that night.
Wow, that's great.
Because I had two of those against Brent. He had another 110 or something like that.
And you just shot.
I called with the worst of it at that point and rivered it. But
we don't want to talk about that. No, note to Chris. Edit that out of the show. Oh, man. Well, congrats, man. That was great. And, you know, it's been a good cruise, you know, nice, relaxing. And we're, you can see the water going by. We're in the huge boardroom, by the way. It was one of the amenities of getting the conference center, was they gave us this 25-person huge boardroom. This is where I held one of the seminars in. And the water's going by. It's so smooth, it's too. Nice. You can hardly feel the ship. I mean, I don't know if it's because we're cruising more and more, and I'm just getting more
used to it.
But, I mean, I don't feel anything ever, you know. But, again, coming to you from the Atlantic Ocean, I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.